Log Talk Radio.
Yo, we the best doing it.
Oh. Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kill, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, sort of war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five silly guys, diversified and educated.
Yo! It's Thursday, September 1st, 2011, and we'd like to welcome you sports fans to another episode of the hardest working sports show in the history of mankind. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm here with the generals, Akil Bayon, Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, and Paul Johnson. Tonight, we're going to discuss pro athletes on the run from the law, historical contracts, Hurricane Irene, and so much more. Stay tuned, because later in the first hour, we'll be talking with UCLA alum, former NBA baller with the Bullets / Wizards, Trailblazers and Cavaliers, and current sports agent Mitchell Butler. So get in that chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter to ask us or Mitch any questions you might have tonight. Also, call in when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline and tell us what's on your mind. That number, as usual, is 323-410-0012. Quick shout out to our radio family, Buzz on Broad and the Broad Street Line. That's our Philly brethren. Last night, Roy and Chris had the creative director of everybody's favorite video game, Madden 12, on their show. Video gamers everywhere were excited about that, so we hope you listened in. Make sure you're here with us next week for our one-year anniversary show. We'll go back down memory lane and let the fans and everyone else know, you know, exactly how we feel about y'all, everybody who's contributed to the show. So right now, the blueprint is in the building, and he's going to shout out some birthdays.
My birthday, yay!
What's up, good brothers? Y'all ready to do this?
Ready to do it.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Paul.
When am I
Yo,
not?
The first birthday I want to talk about is a young man we spoke about recently. That's one Timothy Dwayne Hardaway, who turns 45. When I say the name Tim Hardaway, Doc Bay, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Yo, first thing that comes to mind is me being in high school, in the kitchen, turning out the lights, working on the UTEP two-step in between chairs. And also getting into college, working on the move some more, and keeping myself, working on it as much as I could, to the point where I have caught a lot of victims out there on the court with the UTEP two-step.
Kneecap.
Hardaway crossover. So, there you go.
Death.
Yo, same as Kill. I think about the killer crossover, and that's about it. And back in high school, you know, I even bought them weak-ass sneakers that he had out with the X in the front of the joints, the black top joints. Yeah. Timmy was that dude.
Yeah.
That's all I got. I'm not even going to play his sound bites, and this is his birthday, so I'm not even going to play him out like that today. That's what's up. Happy birthday,
Hot
Timmy.
Hot Block Commander. What you got to say, good brother?
Yo, the first thing I think of is skills. I got them. The second thing I think of is, I hate gay people. I don't like them around me. The second thing I think of is my man had the meanest handle in the league. He used to dribble the ball while driving a car. That's how he developed his proficient and ill handle.
Yo, Tim Hardaway, you have to think of the crossover, because, you know. Yo, hello?
Yeah,
I'm here. We're here.
All right,
no.
Anyway, yo, what I was saying is when I hear the name Timothy Hardaway, I think of the crossover. And also I think of John Stockton's ankles, because he killed them several times, yo. As nice as John Stockton was, Tim used to kill him. Yo, anyway,
Jimmy,
next birthday.
Hey, Jimmy,
what's
Jimmy,
up?
Real quick, the funny thing is, I think it's Superstars 2. He kills John Stockton so bad, like, first they have him on, like, a home and away jersey, and then he hits him with the crossover, goes to the rack.
Yeah, he switched the jersey.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he used to body him. Anyway, next birthday I want to talk about is one Jason Paul Taylor, who turns 37. Hey, Dev,
my
when
birthday.
I say Jason
Yay.
Taylor, a.k.a. Boris Kodjoe, what do you think of?
Man, you just said it. He, defensive end looked like Boris Kodjoe. He had a pretty nice career. Going back down to Miami, I do remember him from 2 years ago when he came to Washington, took all their money like everybody else does, and was a bust in Washington. But people don't play hard when they come to Washington. They come to get that shake, and that's what he got. So
why is that, though? Explain to me why that is. Why is that?
Because they're going to pay you that shake. No matter how old you are, no matter how washed up you are, they're going to pay you like you're the greatest at what you do at the current moment. So you come in, you slack off, you get your money, and you roll. It's corny.
Okay.
Yo, balling for the Redskins is like recognition and honor for all that you've done everywhere else.
Exactly.
Hey, Austin, what you got on Jason Taylor, though, getting back to the birthdays?
Jay Taylor was a lot tougher than we probably give him credit for, at least I do, because he was a light-skinned pretty boy playing on the D-line. So I used to poop on him, but he was nice, man. To be honest, he was nice. He really was nice.
Okay. Doc Bay, what you got on Jason Taylor?
Yo, I mean, solid defensive end, you know, better known for Miami, and got his cake up in Washington, and that's about it, man. Yo, you know what reminds me of? He reminds me of Jason Pitts off the game.
The game? Yeah, he does remind you of Jason Pitts. But what I think about him, I also think about I Got Marriage on my menu, because he looked like Boris Kodjoe. Anyway, next birthday we want to talk about, from the hometown, Katino Rashawn Mobley. Cat Mobley turns 36.
My birthday, yay!
Dev, when I say Cat Mobley, what comes to
Cat
mind?
To me, you know, he's from the crib, so we always had a little bit of bias with his game, but he was a pretty good NBA player, and I was actually surprised at how good he became in the NBA. You know, I remember playing with Cat in a couple of summer leagues and, you know, translating that onto the NBA floor. Like, you just don't expect to see cats that you've been playing with in the league dominating like that. But, you know, Cat was pretty good until he had his little heart issue.
Yeah.
And his little Steve Francis.
Yeah, Austin, what you got, good brother?
Yo, the first thing I think of is I got to go back to my man Tim Hardaway. And if y'all don't get why I went back to Tim Hardaway, y'all figure it out later. And the second thing I think of when I think of Cat Mobley is all the times that I defended that dude when everybody said that he lived a flamboyant, flowerful, colorful, Yancey Thick Pen type lifestyle. And I used to be like, no, he's just a smooth brother from, you know, from the crib. But
and
then
I think you turned out
he cried. Then he cried. Then he cried and showed up on national television crying and talking about what is he going to ever do with his life without being on the same team as Steve Francis. And then I just couldn't defend him no more. Besides that, he did go back at Kobe when Kobe used to get at him. You know, he had game. He is a lefty. Jay was great.
No doubt.
And he's still giving out work. He's still giving out work in summer league.
Yo, that's right. That's right.
15 minutes. About
what you guys thinking, brother?
Man, this goes back to like when we were at Central, man. I think he was the first dude in a game that like dunked near me. Like he didn't dunk on me, but I was like, we were in the 2-3 zone. Yeah, I was
no,
in the bottom.
But did he know, you
were? Just it. I was on the bottom left wing. And then 2-3, and we were at Finley, and Tommy just came down the lane. I don't know where the center went. I'm just, like, watching him, like, bam. And I was like, dang, homie, you have to go like that. But anyway, he was playing for Waterview, by the way. But then I remember that time me and Dev was going up against Alvin Williams and Zach from Philly in the summer league, and I was kind of, you know, giving Alvin Williams a little bit of work. Then that next week,
there it is. It will always show up, folks. It will always come out.
Yeah. Then that next week, Al brings Cat with him. I'm like, oh snap! You brought Cat with him next week, and they were like destroy whoever they were playing. And had a pretty solid NBA career, like the rest of y'all said. Could give you buckets and wasn't scared.
Yo, your mic. Fix your mic, yo. Fix your mic.
Yo, all I gotta say about Cat Mobley is what Brad said. I ain't even gonna say nothing else, yo. Anyway, the last birthday, one Clinton Earl Portis.
God.
Yo, we started with Tim Hardaway, then we got three names. Never mind, I ain't gonna say that. Yo, Dev, Clinton Portis, man.
Clinton Portis? Like I always say, man, Clinton Portis is actually, well, he was a beast at running back. You would never think so because he seemed kind of like a, you know, a pansy boy. But he was a beast. I think the Redskins overused him, made him into a workhorse. Now he's afraid of contact, and he falls on the ground, you know, before he even gets hit. So, you know, that's all I got on Clinton Portis.
You are gay.
What you got on Clinton Portis, homie?
Yo, where did he go? Like, how did he just – he was, like, a dominant 1,700-yard back, and then he just, like, fell off.
Redskins beat him up, man.
Yo, I'm thinking about one thing. Like, I really don't believe in astrology, but all these cats were born around, like – Anyway, Austin, Austin, man, what you got on this, Austin?
Yo, do you really want to ask me what I think of Clinton Porter? All I'm gonna say is he had a pink Range Rover. He took his mom to the prom, and I've seen him wear a velvet suit jacket with a blouse underneath. And that's it. I'm done.
Can't even say nothing, man. Yo, that's all I got, man. Yo, damn.
Oh, hey Jimmy, wait a minute. We got Peter in the chat room. Who says today is Rocky Marciano's birthday? Hey, Rocky, man.
There they go. Every time I start talking about boxing, a white man got to pull Rocky Marciano out their ass.
That's day one.
He beat Joe Louis in that.
There's a rest in peace shout out to Rocky Marciano. Not really sure when he died, but he was born September 1st, 1923. So
let me find out he's a fancy boy too.
Yeah, shout out to Peter. It's all good. We got him.
No doubt.
All right. So I'm gonna let everybody know what happened this week while y'all were on the grind. Y'all boy Meta World Peace, known to you common folks as Ron Artest. He was on the show, the little casting show. He's gonna be on Dancing with the Stars. The thing with that, he's gonna donate. You know, all, if he wins anything, he's going to donate all of his winnings to a cancer charity. So what do y'all think about Meta World Peace, Dancing with the Stars? Y'all give him a chance to win?
Yo, I don't think he could win nothing, but what I'm saying is Ron Artest, as crazy as he is and as much as we talk about him, dude gives back more money than most athletes that are around. I mean, dude, he gave away his ring. Like, he just wants something
else.
Like, he does a lot for different communities, specifically, like, in Queens. So shout out to QB, man.
Yeah, that's true. And I always thought, like, Ron Artest, he seems like a really stiff basketball player. So I'm not sure how he would fare dancing. But
that's my thing,
as much controversy,
like,
as he calls this, y'all don't think the fans are going to keep him on for extra weeks just so they can see Ron Artest acting a fool?
Yeah, no doubt.
Because,
yo, he's even stiff on 2K12, so I don't know how he going, you know what I mean, do salsa and all that.
Yeah. Said he's stiff.
Yeah, so that's. Oh, and speaking of him, his name change has been on hold because the judge put it on hold because he has unpaid parking tickets. So until he clears up his parking situation, he'll be known as Ron Artest. But by the time the show starts, he'll probably be Meta World Peace.
I can relate.
Hey, yo. I wonder if all the way real, like all the way funky.
Too real. When keeping it real goes wrong.
When keeping it real goes wrong, yo, he's wrong.
I wonder if he thought, I want to chip with LA, so maybe they'll just forgive my parking debt. I wonder if he thought that.
Yeah, I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I was thinking it's probably somebody in his entourage getting a bunch of tickets on one of his whips and didn't say anything to him. But who knows? So the next story we got, your boy Bruce Pearl, you know, he received that 3-year show cause penalty from the NCAA a little while back. So instead of just sticking around and you know, serving the time. Dude decided to leave basketball altogether. This dude is taking a job in the private section and will be the vice president of marketing at H.T. Hackney Company in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a wholesale grocery company. This is a wholesale grocery company. So what y'all think about Bruce Pearl just saying,
yo, might get a nice benefit
just rolling out.
Yo,
but,
what's his qualification to sell groceries?
Well, that's funny because the story lists him. They don't even list his attributes as, you know, being a coach and stuff like that. They said they listed him, his background as a student at Boston College, a marketing and economic student at Boston College. So they're not even mentioning that he's been the head coach of Tennessee for however many years and this and that. Marketing economics,
yo,
man.
Yo, that's crazy. Yo, he turned down. He turned down the chance to coach the Frisco team right outside of Dallas for the MBDL. Like, Spud Webb, like, runs the team. Donnie Nelson is, like, part owner and Don Nelson's son. And he was like, nah. He's like, I'm cool.
I'm not working for Spud either, so I'll probably turn that down, too.
It was the richest MBDL contract ever, though. It was, like, $500.
I know, man.
Yeah, that's
I can't
true.
A football named Spud. His name's Spud.
Yo, but real quick, Dev, real quick. You said he's working in marketing, right?
Yeah.
And what's the name of the company?
H.T. Hackney Company.
Now, let me ask you a question. Before this story, have you ever heard of H.T. Hackney Company?
Hell no.
Absolutely never.
So his marketing job
yeah,
is
so
done.
Yeah, guess what? He's already doing his job. Shout out to my man, Bruce Pearl, for doing a great job.
Yeah. Bruce Pearl. Good point. All right, so the next on the grind story, man, did y'all hear about or did you see the video of the Stanley Cup taking a tumble off of a table and actually putting a dent in it? Like, it was in Newfoundland. The guy, what's his name, Michael Ryder, because you know how each player gets to take the cup home for a couple days. So it was under the watch of Michael Ryder, former Boston Bruin. He now plays for the Dallas Stars. So they put the joint on a table, the kind where you got to push the little metal legs out on the table. So somebody didn't lock the legs. And when they started videotaping whatever, the Stanley Cup fell off the table. And now it's a big dent in the cup.
Damn.
Come on, yo. Would you want to be the dude who bends up, you know, the cup gets all bent up while you got it? How do you feel?
Yeah, Lord Stanley don't like that, man.
And you got to pay for it.
Damn, that's very insurance.
Yo, can you insure that kind of thing? Like, go to State Farm, like, yeah, I like to take advantage of your Stanley Cup insurance package.
Hey, you can get insurance on personal property, you know what I'm saying? Like, but yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah, I like you said, Dev, I wouldn't want to be that guy. Like,
yeah.
No matter what he
and
does, man, that's a dude that messed the cup up.
I'd be like, we'll insure it, but you got to bring it in, show it to us. You're bringing this big-ass challenge.
Yeah. And hold up, when you file a claim, let's say somebody steal it, like, how do you go, what store do you go to get another Stanley Cup? You know what I mean?
Yo, you go to Jostin's. last grind story. Your man Jeremy Shockey is a hero. He saved the fellow tight end's his life. Ben Hartstock was choking. in the Carolina Panthers facility.
On a pork tenderloin.
Like, this is the kind of stuff you feed million-dollar athletes in the cafeteria, pork tenderloins. But anyway, the dude was choking, and one of his other teammates tried to come over and give him the Heimlich and was unsuccessful. So your man Jeremy Shockey just came over and punched the dude in his back real hard, and the tenderloin flew out his mouth.
Yo, maybe if Shockey played for the Eagles, they won the Super Bowl because he could have stopped McNatt. Never mind.
Well, Jimmy, actually, McNabb didn't have trouble coughing it up. he needed a teammate to just bust him in his head with a bottle of Pepto or something.
Shout out
yo,
to Ricky
how
Manny
do you?
Junior.
Yo, how do you do? How do you? Unsuccessfully perform the Heimlich. Like, dude just didn't follow the proper steps or something?
Especially when you're a diesel football player. Even if you're not doing it right, you should be strong enough to just, you know, clear whatever's
should
in there.
Should just be able to strong arm it.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people were exaggerating the story, saying that Jeremy Shockey actually gave him the Heimlich, but that wasn't true. He just hit him in his back real hard. And
he just punched
him. Eating with all you get. He stopped all that.
All right, so, yeah, that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the ground.
Yo, in our chat room, John Bat. What's up, John? Anyway, he said, I bet Katina would have known how to do the Heimlich correctly. That wasn't
yeah.
me. I'm just saying, that wasn't me. That's in our chat room, you know what I'm saying?
Tino and Steve used to tenderloins flying out their mouth. Go ahead, John.
Yo, it's time to pass the rock, which is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Holla at them if you want to insure your Stanley Cup. Yo, at any rate, what the pass the rock is when the starting five get the vent on the chosen sports issue, report their favorite headline in a week, and I'm going to inbound the rock to Dev. See if you got anything you want to say, good brother.
I ain't got nothing to say. I'm going to say this, though.
Okay.
Next week is our one-year anniversary show, so this is the last damn time we're going to explain to y'all what Pass the Rock is. Y'all need to be listening. So no more explanations. So with that, I'm going to just set it up, put my hand in the air and call the play, and pass the rock to my man B. Austin at the half-court line.
Man, thank you, good brother. And I do have something that I really want to get off my chest because I'm a little angry. Yeah, that's right. The hot block commander. The hot block commander is vexed. First of all, I'm in the war wagon, live and direct, driving in the Washington, D.C. area. And there must be a Washington Redskins game going on. Traffic is horrendous. But my thing is, y'all don't win nothing, so why y'all out going to the game? The other thing that I wanted to say is, yo, I don't appreciate Katino Mobley and Steve Francis being multi-cajillionaires when they played for Houston and they decided to get a mansion together. Yo, where'd they do that at? One dude was making $16 million a year. The other was making $20 million. And they said, we're not going to get our own separate houses on the same block. We're going to move in together. So does that mean y'all are life partners? All right, but anyway, that's not even what I wanted to rap to y'all about, man. This week, my Philadelphia Eagles took it upon themselves to offer Michael Vick 6 years, $100 million, with $40 million of it guaranteed, making him the third highest paid player in the National Football League. Now, let me preface my statements with this. I am a Michael Vick fan. I've seen him grow. He improved his passer rating from somewhere in the 70s, that's a C, that's close to failing, all the way up to 100, that's an A. He improved his passing per game from somewhere down around where his man Vince Young is, up to 251 yards per game. He only threw 6 picks last year and had 21 touchdowns. He had the most rushing touchdowns of his career last year. So, he had a pretty damn good season, and I'm happy for him, and I believe that he deserved to get paid, and I want him to be the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles this season. Now that we're done with all the mushy stuff, let me just go ahead and say this. You do not pay a 31-year-old player hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah, I know it was only 100. I'm exaggerating. Yo, they paid too much for the dude. He's 31. And unlike other quarterbacks, before you use that as an example to rebut my point, listen, we all know that Michael Vick is leaving the pocket. Whether he becomes a proficient pocket passer or not is not going to matter. The dude is one of the greatest athletes to ever play the game, and he's definitely the greatest athlete to ever play quarterback. So he's going to use that athleticism. And what does that mean? At 6 foot and 203 pounds, he's going to get effed up. There are people that are going to tee off. There are people that are going to tee off on him in the NFL. This is not college, folks. These are grown gorillas at 245 pounds that can run 4.440s. So it don't matter how fast Michael Vick is. He's going to get effed up. So why would you pay him all his money at 31 years old? The second problem I have with the contract, I'm going to be real brief. He only did this for 1 year. 1 year. He had a great season last year. But that does that mean you make him the third highest paid player in the world to play football? Come on.
In the world, Craig.
In the world, Craig. In the world. Now, let's put this in perspective. Tom Brady, highest paid player in the world, Craig. Three Super Bowls. Perennial 4,000-yard passer. Mike Vick just had his first 3,000-yard passing season. Come on, y'all. Last reason that you don't give Mike Vick $100 million and 40 guaranteed, we're the Philadelphia Eagles. We make smart decisions. We spend money on linemen. We spend money on the players that the average fan and lemming doesn't really appreciate because they won't end up on ESPN. But the players that help make us perennial NFC East champions, perennial NFC champions, and if Donovan wasn't throwing picks, we'd have been in a lot more Super Bowls because we spend money on linemen. We spend money on getting it done, not getting on ESPN. Eagles, yo, y'all kicked me in the stomach. Mike Vick, congratulations. I'm happy for you, buddy. Spend your money wisely. You won the lottery. I'm out.
Pass the rock. Stop gunning.
Come on, take you out.
I was all right. I got it. All right. That's interesting. B. Austin, we appreciate your outline and Roman numeral points. And on the heels of B. Austin's NFL contract talks, I have my own NFL contract problem I would like to talk about. And this has to do with the Chris Johnson contract that he just recently signed with the Titans after holding out, and the ensuing DeSean Jackson contract as he held out first couple weeks of training camp. And then decided to report, and now the Eagles are reportedly working on a deal with DeSean Jackson. Now, I have a fix for all of this. The NFL, they should have a system in place for when they draft second round, third round, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round picks and say, okay, look, we're going to assign you to this $500,000, $600,000, or in DeSean Jackson case, $300,000 contract, but if you become an all-pro, you get this bonus, or you get this kind of contract now, or if you hit the Pro Bowl, or if you have a certain amount of yards, 1,000 yards, or you have a certain amount of TDs for DBs, certain amount of interceptions, or if you're so good, we can just go into the DB shutdown percentage, which they use to rate Nnamdi Asamoah and Darrelle Revis, or if you're defensive lineman, sacks, etc. Just have a performance-based contract where, okay, if you're just an average fourth-round pick and you don't do too much, you get your $300,000, $400,000. But if you play like one of the top tier players at your position, now automatically for that next year, this $5 or $10 million kicks in, depending on how good you perform. And this would avoid holdouts. This would help people in fantasy football who's like, man, you know what, dude might hold out the whole season or half the season, so I'm not going to pick him up. It'll help fans maybe come to preseason games. And you know what, this should have been added to the lockout talk. But for some reason, NFL didn't do that. So there we have it. DeSean Jackson ending his holdout, and Chris Johnson ending his holdout. And even you take it back to Emmitt Smith. So NFL, if you're listening, maybe you can put this in place and you can help everybody out. So with that, I will come down with the left hand, between the legs, crossover, U-step, two-step, Tim Hardaway style. Then I'll pick up my dribble. Jump up in the air. You know you're not supposed to leave your feet before you make a pass. And then I will look to the left, look to the right, and then I will throw a pass to Jimmy on the baseline.
Yes, sir. It's funny that you mentioned these contracts, and you in Austin, because I have something similar I want to talk about, but I'm looking at it from a different angle. War Room World, this is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. Heisenberg, a.k.a. Walter White. No, I'm joking. Anyway, I just want to take a few minutes to let all you naysayers know that the prison system in America does work. Criminals can be rehabilitated. Those who commit crimes and go to prison definitely can be rehabilitated. Michael Dwayne Vick is a prime example of our federal tax dollars at work with a positive outcome. MV7 committed his crime, did his time, and now he is being awarded $40 million for all of his hard work with the possibility of $60 million more. So all you convicted criminals out there, Cedric Benson, O.J. Simpson, Kwame Kilpatrick, and a couple of my cousins whose name I'm not going to say on the air, there is hope. You too can be rehabilitated and start your lives anew. But before I go, I want to talk about the biggest winner now that Mike Vick has a new contract. It's not the Eagles, Mike Vick, or even his fiance and children. The ultimate winner in all of this is one Mr. Marcus Dion Vick. Now that his older brother is back on top and has a shiny new contract, Marcus can quit his job at Target and his second job as a sandwich artist at your local Subway. And with that being said, I want to say congratulations to Mike Vick. You know, he got $200 million contracts. How crazy is that? But at any rate, I just want everybody to know that the prison system does work. Yo, and with that, I dunk the rock because I am nice.
And the crowd is ecstatic. I'll at him, PJ.
Yo, I'm still tripping off the fact that Jimmy says sandwich artist. But anyway, all right, y'all. If y'all want to check us out, you can go to our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter right from our homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. While you're still on the site, just click the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or your Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so that you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. And I bet you one thing, the War Room professors just might call on you. With that.
Call me.
Dev, real quick, I just want to make a quick statement because I got like 3 tweets of people coming at my neck. I was being sarcastic. Yo, I got cats sending me tweets. I got cats sending me tweets like, my cousin can't get a gig. Yo.
Tell him to learn how to run a 1440.
Yo, straight up. Exactly. It's sort of like what Nas said. Nas said in our chat room because he's a star athlete. I know that. I'm being sarcastic, people.
Yeah, tell your cousin to get his 40 time up. He might have a chance. Either that or, you know, you got to practice his sandwich art.
Sarcasm is a hard concept for lemmings to grasp.
We're going to just give a quick congrats. You know, we spent 10 minutes talking about these dudes last week, but we just want to give a quick shout-out to the Huntington Beach, California team who beat Japan in the Little League World Series. They actually had the whole squad on SportsCenter this morning. So shout-out to them. Congratulations. You had a 50% chance to do it. Get Jimmy started. But no, hey, y'all know that y'all the world's most famous soaker, Brandon Davies, has been reinstated back at BYU. So I'm thinking, look, Jimmer left. He's their leading scorer coming back. So did they have to do this? Y'all think they had to do this?
Yo, I mean, I'm trying to comment without saying nothing too crazy because, you know, he is the number one soaker in the country. He's got the soap game on lock. But I mean, they definitely had to bring him back. I mean, he was reinstated. He served a suspension, you know, so it had to let him back.
So would you say that my man is a super soaker?
Yo, he just gonna have to make sure he stay out them panties so he can continue playing. As long as he stay out
literally
them panties, he'd be all right.
Literally, but yeah, this is one of those moves.
Did he get suspended because he was soaking, or did he get suspended because he moved while he was soaking? Because when he moves, that's
a violation.
But on a serious note, though, this is one of those things where you knew something like this would happen. Their best player left. He's their second best player. They're like, look, we either stick by this honor code or we're just complete garbage this year. So, you know, it's one of those things where BYU actually had it, you know, they had it both ways. Because even though their squad was ranked as high as number 3 last year, I think the school pretty much knew they weren't going to win the tournament. So they were able to actually send a message and suspend this dude. But, of course, they let him back in. So how steadfast is the rule in the first place?
Just like the NCAA. They follow after.
Well, NCAA. Speaking of the NCAA, the governing body of the NCAA said all 8 players, the current Miami Hurricanes, they accepted impermissible benefits from Nevin Shapiro, and they suspended 8 players. Now, 5 of the players were prominent on the team, which is Ja'Cory Harris, which is, you know, he's the quarterback, receiver Travis Benjamin, defensive players Marcus Fortson, Sean Spence, and Adewale Ujomo. They all got suspended for 1 game, so they're going to miss this week's game against the Maryland Twerps in College Park. Now, the highest penalties went out to starting safety Ray-Ray Armstrong.
Ray-Ray.
That's a poor name. Ray-Ray Armstrong. Ray-Ray Armstrong and tight end Dyron Dye. They're going to miss 4 games, and they got to repay like $700 to $800 that they get. Like, who are they paying this to, first of all? That's what I want to know. Where's this money going? They're talking about they got to repay the benefits. But where's this money going? And the most severe penalty went to Oliver Vernon, another defensive player who's going to miss 6 games, and he got to repay more than $1,200 of benefits that he got from Shapiro. Where's the money going, yo?
Where
they going
to get it from? Ray Lewis, I want to say Ray Lewis should call a meeting, him and Ed Reed and all the other former Hurricanes, and then put some money in the pot and then, you know, give it somehow, well, I guess not illegally,
Give
it to the players. I know, right? But they need to do something, man.
That's what I'm saying. Where are they going to get the money from? Where are they getting it from, and then where is it going?
First off, Ray Lewis and Reed and them better stay away before they get exposed, too.
Yeah, my man,
definitely got paid.
Nye said, he said I should go to buy some books for that university. Ain't nobody at that university.
Yo, Y'all missing the point of all of this. The point of this is my man is a starting safety in 2011, and he got a slave name. Ray-Ray.
Ray-Ray.
Yeah.
Earl.
Hey, Jimmy, I'll move on to the next topic. You want to explain to our homie Minister Kevin Carter in the chat room what soaking is? Or do you just want to, you know, somebody just want to tell him on the air? You want to explain it to him on the air? Or you want to give it to him in the chat room?
I don't know a proper way to say this, man. Plus, I'm trying not to keep laughing, but, you know, the whole concept.
Y'all want me to tell
it? Put it like this. Somebody else who's listening in the chat room, you explain it. That way I stay out of it, man.
If I look in the chat room and they haven't explained it to you in a few minutes, we'll get back to it and explain it to you.
Look out for it, Naren.
Real quick, Usain Bolt. Yo, in semis of the track and field world championships, this dude literally jogged to a win. He killed the field. So in the next race, he got disqualified for a false start. And I'm thinking throughout his whole career or the little bit of time that he's been famous, that we've known him, starting has never been his forte. He always starts bad and like, just walks the field down and then beats everybody by, like, 15 yards. So my question is, like, PJ, why does he have to false start? Like, why would he ever get disqualified for a false start? Unless he was
That's
out
what
to
I
break
don't
a
understand.
New
world
record.
Well, yeah. I actually go ahead, PJ.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if it was just his, it was obviously it was an accident, but I don't know if he was just like fidgety or antsy, because I know he ain't trying to get a jump. Like, he doesn't need to get a jump. Dude is like a human cheetah. So I'm just thinking it was honestly, I think he was just being careless. I think it was just a lapse in concentration. And it's
an enhancement
crazy
drug. Had a side effect. He had a side effect with the
the Ben Johnson. He was one of the Ben Johnsons, and he was twitching. Go ahead, Brad. What
the
you say?
Gentleman, the gentleman that actually won the race was his training partner, Akari Thompson.
Yeah.
And they were saying that because I watched the boy career, and you know, he definitely is not a human being. But as you say, because of his height being 6'5", and him traditionally being more of a 400 runner, because he came down to run the 100 later in his career. So his start has always been more of a stand up and then run. So the entire season he's been focusing on his start, because if you realize, yo, the dude ran a 9.58 with a bad start. So if he masters starting, can he run a 9.5 flat? Can
Man,
he run a 9.4?
That's my whole thing.
I mean,
I'm like, the only reason I can see dude false starting is if he was going out there to try to run an 8 flat.
I like the bull because he is so cocky, but he's like kind of funny with it. Yo, there's no competition for him. So when he runs and you see him working on his start, he's not running against the other people in the race. He's running against history in the clock. So he's trying
Chris
to master
Johnson the
clock.
He can win for the rest of his life.
He
running against time before he get caught with them PEDs. But
Yo, hey, I got a question for B. Austin. So you're saying with him working on his start, it's conceivable that he can eventually run like a, let's say if he ran a 40-yard dash, he could conceivably run a, like a 3.46 at some point if he works on his start?
Damn!
I mean, put it like this. To answer your question seriously, the time that he ran for the world record was projected not to be run for another 35 years. So he's like literally.
That's until another monkey mates with a gazelle.
Yo. It's crazy.
If he's going to go that fast. If he gonna run that fast, he gonna end up like Marty McFly and Doc Brown and just straight go back in time or something. Like, he's gonna be there off the screen.
You ain't gonna run that fast, man.
He's gonna have to start getting emissions tests every year if he keep running that fast.
Emissions tests. Come out with a sticker on his cheek.
Crazy, because I got on this Back to the Future T-shirt right now, and I got the little fire in the street.
But I
know y'all watched this because, you know, we talked about it a little bit the other day, and I hadn't seen it yet, but I watched it on the DVR. But I know most of you guys saw the 24/7 Mayweather Ortiz, and we can just get right to the point because nobody really want to talk about Ortiz right now or what's going on with the fight. What's up with the blow up between Floyd and his daddy? What was that about? I don't even know how that started. Why that started?
Honestly, when I saw that, it's funny because it struck a chord for me, because one thing I noticed is that, like we talked about before, a lot of these boxers had their dad as their trainer slash manager slash the person that got them into the sport, and was always really hard on them, from Roy Jones to Floyd Mayweather to Shane Mosley, to Zab Judah, to Diego Corrales, rest in peace. And a lot of their dads were really hard on them. And even Floyd, I saw an interview with him earlier, not in this particular 24/7, but he said his dad used to be almost abusive to him when he was younger in terms of boxing.
Right.
Like, if he made mistakes, always on him, always hard on him.
Right.
And I think, and I think a lot of, when I see Floyd interact with his father, it almost looks like there's a lot of pain from years back. And you know his father left him, so his father didn't even really raise him. His father was in and out of his life because his dad was in and out of jail along with boxing. And I think a lot of it is pain and hurt from his father, and now that he's in a position that he can, like, almost get back because he resents the relationship that they've had, it just seems like he's very angry at it.
Yo,
you sound like Dr. Melfi. You sound like a psychiatrist, man. I thought you was information systems undergrad, man. What's going on?
Yo, but he's right, though, because that argument started for nothing. For nothing
yeah,
at all.
Much.
He just
I think,
got
and also,
angry.
I think,
they were...
But I think they also have similar personalities that clash. But I know one thing, out of all that happened, it just made me as scared of Uncle Roger. Because Uncle Roger was sitting back chilling, looking like I knocked both these dudes out. Yo,
Roger didn't say anything at all. Uncle Roger didn't say one thing.
Roger's a G. Uncle Roger's a G, yo. But
only thing he said was, I don't care nothing about RP. What I got to talk about? He ain't got no teeth. That's the main reason he don't talk too much. Because it's half of the alphabet he can't pronounce. Because he ain't got no pearlies. He ain't got no pearly whites in there. But
hey, look.
Yeah,
but,
I definitely agree with PJ's assessment of the situation. There's a lot of pain and resentment in that because you wouldn't. You wouldn't see an argument break out. You wouldn't see an argument break out that thick over that nothing that you were referring to.
Yo, but if you look, like, you know, Floyd, it's no secret that Floyd is all about the camera because Floyd actually, instead of, like, looking at his dad while he's screaming at him, if you peep it, he's looking in the camera. Every time he starts to scream and has something significant to say, he's looking at the camera. He's not looking at his dad. So I think it's just Floyd just putting on another show, getting them ratings up for 24/7, and maybe for this fight because, you know, who's really excited about it. But look, we were going to talk a little bit about the Javaris Crittenden situation, but, you know, we're gonna get to that after we bring on our special guest because, you know, we actually got him on the line now. So we're going to bring him on. He's a UCLA alum. And you might know him. He was a shooting guard for the Washington Bullets/Wizards, the Portland Trail Blazers, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. But these days, he's making his money as a sports agent. So we're going to bring into the war room for the very first time, Mitch Butler. Mitch, you there?
I'm here, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
No problem.
My man, money-making Mitch.
I like the way that sounds, money-making Mitch.
That's right. That's what it's about. Got to get it done. All right, so this is Devin, by the way. Me and Akil spoke with you the other day. So, Akil, you can go ahead, take it away, and do what you do, bro.
All right, man. Well, let's talk about it.
All right, where's Akil? Oh,
where'd Akil go?
There he is.
Yeah, I didn't.
So I had to self-mute it.
Oh, sorry about that. I was still in the screening room. Sorry about that, fellas. Okay, Mitch, it's great to have you on the show. And I'm gonna start off with a question. I'm pretty sure that the life of an NBA player and an agent are quite different. How has that transition from player to agent been for you, and what have you or others around you done to make it smoother?
Well, for me, pretty much it was a natural progression. You know, I finished up playing in 2004. And ironically enough, when I was released, I was offered a coaching job in the exact same sentence. It kind of blew my mind. My coach, Jeff Bizdelic, the Denver Nuggets, well, you know, he sits me down and he says, Mitch, you know, we're going to have to release you, but we'd like to hire you as an assistant coach. And I'm sitting there like, wait a minute, what's going on? And I pretty much knew I was at the end of the road. You know, the wheels weren't turning like they used to. They're a little squeaky. A little wobbly, and, you know, Carmelo and these guys are blowing past me, not to say that he wouldn't have blown past me when I was 22, but definitely being 33, it made it seem like it was just a thousand times worse. But, you know, that transition for me, I took a year and I worked with the Washington Wizards as director of player development. So I was a coach behind the bench and kind of a liaison between the player and the coach, the player and the general manager, and the general manager and the coach. So I did that for a year and then jumped over into the agent business. So it wasn't like it was a direct, smooth transition over, but one in which, you know, I got a chance to see every aspect of the business, you know, from player to coach to management to an agent. And the transition for me has been smooth. It's been good, very well received by my peers in the business, obviously very well perceived and received by general managers and team personnel people. So the transition for me has been good.
All right, that's Mitch, this is Devin again. That's a hell of a way to get released. You know, I'm hoping when I get fired from my job that they ask me to be an executive in the same sentence.
No, right? You actually get a promotion when you're getting released.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so basically I'd assume that as an agent in this whole lockout situation, I'd assume you'd be 100% on the side of the players, but I really don't want to assume. So from an agent's perspective, what are your thoughts on the NBA lockout, and do you think the sides are close enough to avoid missing any time this season?
Well, that's a safe assumption, pretty safe. We stand behind our guys, and listen, at the end of the day, this is a much different situation than football. Football, they were bickering over how to split $9 billion. There are a couple of teams here that are losing money, and I think the owner's approach to this in terms of going into the players' pockets and taking it directly from the players is the wrong approach. There has to be some form of revenue sharing amongst the owners, which, you know, the Players Association has on record that there's some owners that don't want to participate in that because, you know, they've done well by their teams. They've built a great brand in their market, and, you know, they're selling that market to consumers in their marketplace. And, you know, that's part of running a business, and they don't want to have to share that with other owners. But in order for this to work, there has to be some form of revenue sharing. Listen, there are $600-700 million apart per year on this deal. Does that say today that they're going to lose games? It sounds like it to me. But I think you really can't evaluate this until you get to the point where real checks are being lost. That means checks by the players are being lost, and that's at the start of the season. And that means checks by the owners or revenue by the owners is being lost because nobody's coming through those gates. Once you get to that point, then I think you'll really start to see the urgency with which to get a deal done. Same thing happened in football, although, they, like I said, they were fighting over different things. It wasn't until they got to the twilight hours where you could potentially lose a season and a lot of money could go down the drain that people became very urgent with their negotiations.
Okay. Mitch, this is Jimmy,
yeah,
by the way.
There's a big difference. Jim, real quick, I was saying he's right. There's a big difference between what they're fighting for. Because, you know, in the NFL, and at the end of the day, I really don't even know exactly what they got done because a lot of the things that they did in the NFL, I mean, I'm not going to say it stayed the same, but it just you just look at what actually happened and you wonder if all of that was worth it. But go ahead, Jim, if you can ask your question.
No, my question was this, Mitch. By the way, thanks for joining us again. But my question is this. If the lockout persists, are you in favor of the player, are the players playing in other countries to stay active and get paid during the work stoppage? What's your opinion of that?
I have one better. I think that what you're currently seeing right now with all the barnstorming around by Kevin Durant, you know, Kobe Bryant's made a few cameos, LeBron has made a few cameos in some of these places, Chris Paul, Carmelo. I think the players need to figure out a way to somehow galvanize the entire body, the entire union. You know, maybe you go and you play for your team in your particular city, and you do it old school style. You get on buses, you ride around, and you play these games on college campuses. And you know, you may not make the type of money that you're making now, but the message is clear to the owners that hey, we're as much a part of this entire revenue generating stream as you know think and we believe. I think right now the position is that you know with these guys going overseas, they're helping to enhance the NBA brand. The NBA will be a global brand somewhere between 5 to 10 years from now. Games will be played on another continent, and teams will go over for weeks at a time and, you know, play within the league there, and there's going to be this global world championship that will be played at the end of some season. That's going to occur. That's the vision here. When you look at the NBA and how it's being positioned going forward. So the players going over and playing in these countries is only going to be helping that NBA brand when they get back to the negotiating table. Now, that being said, absolutely some of these players should be taking advantage of that, because when you look at what these players could be potentially losing off of a deal, some of these guys will probably lose somewhere between 15 to 20% of their total earning power during their NBA careers. Some of these guys will play through one big contract, and let's say you lose this whole year of basketball, and that year paid you $7 or $8 million, and that was the biggest year on your deal. You know, that's maybe 15 to 20% of your total earnings while you played basketball. That's a lot of money to leave on the table. So they should have the right to, and they should have the desire to want to go overseas to offset that or to eliminate as much of the hit that they're going to take on their pocketbooks.
Well, let me ask you another question. As an agent, I don't know if you've had this experience or not, but how different is it to negotiate a contract for a player playing in another country as opposed to the NBA?
Well, I mean, as an NBA certified agent, I'm not FIBA certified, so, you know, I basically I negotiate through a FIBA certified agent in Europe, and we have lots of relationships and contacts in Europe, and what we do is we put a number out there that we're interested in, and, you know, the team will have some banter back and forth with us. We'll make sure that we've got the necessary insurances and the necessary clauses within the contract if we want an NBA out clause, or we want performance bonuses, any of those things attached to it. So, it's basically like negotiating a contract here. You're just doing it through another person who is FIBA certified.
Okay, thanks.
And Mitch, I actually think that was a pretty good idea you had, about them going around the college campuses, making money on their own. It's a good idea, but you're not getting these players on no buses, man.
Well, let me tell you this.
Like they're Harlem Wrens on.
Let me tell you this, guys, and to keep it really real. The question that I always pose to athletes today is what do you do that is something that can immortalize you, that can make you be remembered forever? You know, you go back in time and you look at some of the great athletes, Muhammad Ali, Arthur Ashe, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, there's probably a whole host of Jackie Robinson, people that I'm forgetting. These people stood for something on an athletic field. They stood for something that was really powerful and really huge, so that Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Dwight Howard, so that these guys could enjoy the benefits that they're enjoying today. What will you do? What legacy can you leave behind? And if that means that you get on a bus and you ride 5 or 7 hours, or you buy a commercial ticket and you get on a plane and you fly commercially to participate in the game, to let someone know that, hey, I'm not going to let you take away what so many people have fought so hard for, you got to have a purpose at some point. And these athletes got to stop being, you know, viewed and looked at as prima donnas, that guys that won't grind it out and you know, get themselves dirty. They came from that. Most of these guys came from that. They know what it's like to not have food, to not have clothes, to not, you know, your parents living month to month, check to check, sometimes behind rent, not knowing where you're going to stay. They know that, you know. So your ability to want to fight for everything that you believe that other guys before you stood for, that's huge, man. And, you know, I think that if the right person gets in front of these guys and spells it out to them that way, you know, you can't help but, you know, touch these guys in the chest. You know, they're going to make money. They're going to be fabulously wealthy and rich and should be able to take care of their kids. But you got to stand for something. You watch the Kurt Flood show on HBO. This guy gave up his baseball career for free agency. I mean, come on, man. Stand for something.
Man, I feel you.
That's major, man. That's major, Mitch, you know. That's major, because it's like
you're becoming a people's champion. You're championing the wants of the people because the people want ball.
Absolutely. Ali, Muhammad Ali is probably, no, arguably, the most recognizable athlete in the world. The world. Not because of what he did in the ring, but because of what he stood for outside the ring.
Exactly.
I mean, this guy stood for something much bigger than the game of boxing. These guys have a chance to stand on a soapbox and be much bigger than the game of basketball. You know, and that's taking that position and that stance. Hey, we're not going to let you touch what we built. Built this over 70 years. That's big.
That's true. That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Mitch, this is PJ. Just as you alluded to earlier, we know that the NBA players, they usually play ball in summer leagues. But this summer, due to the lockout, it's like the game's way more high profile. So are you a little bit more nervous about clients playing in these like highly competitive leagues while the lockout is going on, especially considering the fact that they don't have access to NBA trainers and team doctors and things like that?
I love it, man. You know, when I played, you know, we played nonstop all day. You know, you're going to be playing anyway. So the fact that they have these leagues going on, the Drew League, the Goodman League, the Mello League, that's the first sign that, hey, you know, we're onto something here. Now if you want to get creative with this thing and you want to start looking at online streaming of these games and maybe trying to put together some type of financial package with a Google or with a Hulu or with, you know, something like that. You know, you're talking about, you know, capturing content, presenting content to the consumers. They don't have it now. The NBA is on a lockout. Some people need their basketball fix. So if you can put together teams of Carmelo, LeBron, and Chris Paul, and you pit them against Kevin Durant, Juan Dixon, you know, John Wall. You come out to L.A., you got Paul Pierce, Baron Davis, James Harden, JaVale McGee, Brandon Jennings. You know, I mean, come on, man. People are going to pay to see that. People want to see that. There's a way that you can construct this so that, you know, there's content being delivered. There's some form of a compensation package. The big guys may not even need the money. The LeBrons and those guys, really, that's what I'm saying. Stand up and do something for the smaller guys. You know, the guys that, you know, ride this lockout out. You know, take a position and a stance that's really strong, that's really, you know, that has teeth to it. And, you know, you really start to, I think, shake the very core and the fabric of how these owners are looking at, you know, approaching this lockout.
You got me looking at this lockout in a whole different way right now.
A whole nother light. Like we now have to think about putting together the War Room series of summer league ball or even fall league ball with Mitchell Butler's help, money making Mitch. Come on, man.
That's my man.
You know, you got to be willing to think outside the box here. You know, if you and you try to go up against the owner, a millionaire will never outlast a billionaire. It just doesn't happen. But if you can get creative, you know, the little guy, you know, the David can always slay Goliath with a little bit of forethought. And if you have a little bit of forethought, a little bit of ingenuity, and a little bit of sacrifice, everybody's got to be willing to sacrifice a little bit. Trust me, you will win. Dr. Martin Luther King didn't walk all those steps, have rocks thrown in his face, people spit on him, dogs bite him, you know, water hoses being turned on him. You know, he didn't take those small little steps as David to slay Goliath. I mean, that was an insurmountable task. It was insurmountable. Right. There were people saying, oh, man, you're crazy. There's no way that you're going to be able to change, you know, the way that this country works and operates. But his desire, his willing to sacrifice, lay himself on the line for that. And, man, I mean, you know, you guys have a radio show, man. You know, it's awesome. That's awesome.
We're the voice. Money Making Mitch. This is B. Austin. We really, really appreciate having you on. And as you know, I can definitely echo the sentiments of my brothers when I say that, you know, you've given us a perspective and opened eyes to looking at this lockout in a whole nother light. But on another note, we've seen you acting in a couple flicks, Blue Chips and Rebound. Now, you've played a ball player in both. Which comes naturally to you, you know, because you that's what you are. But how did you get into those projects, and how did you enjoy those experiences? And will we see you on the silver screen again?
You know what? You probably won't see me on the screen again. You'll probably see me behind it in some way or capacity. We've had an opportunity to do a project with Dwight Howard that, you know, we're hoping to get sold. The project's called Divas and Jocks. And, you know, Dwight's an executive producer on it. And, you know, our company will have an executive producer's credit as well. So you'll probably see me operating more behind the camera, you know, helping to put these things together. I think a lot of athletes have natural acting talents and ability. We are entertainers. You know, we just do it in a different format, in a different way that, you know, is standard in Hollywood. But, you know, my experience with having, you know, had the opportunity to participate on the big screen, if I knew that I had a script thrown at me, you know, once every month, I'd be an actor. It's the best job that you could potentially have. I mean, it's fun. You know, the hours and the people that you meet on set. You know, it's, you know, we had so much fun doing Blue Chips. It was one big party. Shaq was the biggest kid in the world, and you know, Penny was great, and you know, then we have all these other, you know, athletic personalities. You know, people forget, you know, Calvert Chaney, Rodney Rogers, Bobby Hurley.
People in there.
Rex Walters. There were so many guys in that movie, and you know, we had a blast filming it, and it was so much fun. And you know, I got it through a UCLA alumni, a guy named Sandy Bressler, who represents Jack Nicholson, and you know, he pitched me for the role, and I read for Butch McRae, but they were looking for a little bit of a bigger name. So they happened to go with a guy who had a little doll named after him called Penny. So, you know, doing Rebound, the Legend of Earl Manigault, that was great. That was a lot of fun working with Eric LaSalle. You know, again, you know, there's a camaraderie and fun on the set that is just, it's second to none. You know, and would I have loved to have participated in a movie where I could play something other than a basketball player? Yes, you know. So, but you know, that day may come still. You know, you can't totally rule that out.
Could Don Cheadle ball?
You know, he's not bad. Now, the funny thing is that, you know, our kids go to school together now, so I see him all the time, and I'm like, man, you know, he had you on that trampoline when you were going up dunking, right?
Some of the fake looking dunks. Hey, Mitch. We got a question from the chat room, and we're going to get you out of here on that one. But first of all, we got a comment and a question.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told us to tell you that Richard Petruska's jump shot was greater than yours.
Oh, man. He's never met a shot he didn't like, you know?
and that was from Niran in the chat room, but the question is from Minister Kevin Carter in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
His question is, What would your advice be to the younger generation of athletes on investing their earnings to secure the future? And like I said, we'll get you out of here on that one.
That's a great question. You know, I myself have always envisioned myself heading up and running an agency where our athletes take ownership in what they do. I'm a very radical outside-of-the-box thinker. I believe that if Nike or Adidas or Under Armour is willing to walk to you and hand you $10 million to endorse a product of theirs, what are they making?
Yep.
And I think all too often athletes will sell themselves out for the quick buck. And again, that just goes back to having a value, a moral, having a value of yourself as a person to be able to say, you know what, I'm not going to be used that way. Or, you know what, I'll sign this 3-year deal out of college. And then once I become a superstar, I'm going to start my own line, my own brand. Why not? You know, there's a reason why Nike will not offer anyone the same deal that Brand Jordan has, that Michael Jordan has. You know, it'll never be done again. They realize that, you know what, that's a bad model. That's something that we cannot afford to do. So
right.
That in itself should be a message to all these young athletes that, you know, take control of your brand. Your brand may be strong enough to only get you to be good in your community. But if you're good in your community, there's a way that you can help your community. You can monetize that. You can have dollars circulating in your community. But if you're the type of person that can carry a national brand or an international brand, there's no way why you should sell yourself to another company. If you can't partner with that person and bring together a product that consumers can use, you know, you shouldn't be doing it. Everyone should be looking at Magic Johnson and saying, that's the business model that I want. Before Magic does anything, he's going to have his name sitting right next to the main brand's name, and that's just how it goes. So, you know, my message to all the young people would be, hey, take control of your brand. Take control of who you are, because, trust me, it's worth something. And for some guys, it's worth a really, really big number.
I know. That's really, really good advice, Mitch, and we appreciate you being on the show. We must, you know, have you back one day so we can do this again. It's been very enlightening. Fellas, y'all got anything real quick y'all want to say before we get Mitch off?
Mitch, I wanted you to let the people know, who do you represent, you know, or what's a sampling your artist roster? Or not artist, your athlete roster.
Yeah, I currently represent Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley. Those are my two clients that I represent. Within my firm, we represent about 30 NBA guys. We have Nene, Anderson Varejao, Jason Terry, Sean Marion, Al Harrington, Drew Gooden, John Wall, a whole host of other guys as well that I'm probably forgetting. But, you know, it's a big-time agency, Lagardère Unlimited, and, you know, we've got a nice client roster. And,
I admit you got to work on getting Superman for us for the show, man. work on.
We'll see what we can do, man. We'll see.
All right, great having you on, man. Thanks for
real quick, Dev, before we that's okay. Hey, Mitch, this is Akil again. I just wanted to wanted to give you props just on your basketball career and then switching that over to acting, switching over to business, and almost being a champion for the people, for the cause, and just being knowledgeable in every aspect. And, I feel like the NBA should hire you for their rookie symposium. You could just speak to all the young guys coming in so you can impart your knowledge. So that's all I had to say.
I appreciate that, man. These guys definitely could use that, and, you know, someone who's walked in there exact footsteps, you know, would certainly be good. And, you know, I always want to see these guys do a lot better than I've done. So, be awesome.
All right. Well, thanks a lot
for calling,
Mitch. Really appreciate it.
Guys,
Mitchell Butler, everybody. All right. Yeah, that's what's up, Mitch.
That was
very enlightening, man. I hope people were listening.
I
hope some of our younger
show. I'm ready to go take ownership of something, man. I'm inspired right now, man.
Hope some of these younger listeners were taking heed to a lot of the stuff he was saying. Real quick, Jimmy, before we jump into that NFL talk, because I know it's what everybody wants to hear, we had two things. Well, one thing we just mentioned and one thing we want to talk about. So we want to talk a little bit about the Javaris Crittenden situation and get you guys' take on that. But before we do that, we just wanted to, just send a little prayer out to everybody on the East Coast who may have been affected by the hurricane this past weekend. We hope everything is okay. If everything isn't okay, like you said, our condolences and prayers to any situations that, you know, didn't turn out the way we may have wanted them to. We got hit hard the last week, man. Earthquakes, hurricanes, but everything good where you guys were?
PJ
had it worse than I did. We both from Philly, but PJ's close to a body of water and I'm not, so I was cool. You know, there's a bunch of rain. It looked to me as though nothing happened the next day, but PJ has a different story because he was close to a body of water.
Yeah, I'm across from the Schuylkill, so that Schuylkill, like on Kelly Drive, the Schuylkill, man, it just swallowed up Kelly Drive, so
yeah,
it was just amazing sight. Fortunately, I don't think anybody was hurt, just some, you know, flood damage here and there, but it could have been worse. So like you said, it's, you know, a blessing that we came through two natural disasters and still are, you know, still keep on keeping on.
Yeah, we saw a lot of people on social media this week, you know, bragging and calling a storm a punk and this and that. you know, I just try to impart on people, like, you know, what happened on your block is not indicative of what happened during the whole East Coast. Your block is not on the whole East Coast. 43 people lost their lives. There's still people in, like, Vermont and Jersey trapped because of floodwaters and stuff like that. So, you know, I was just trying to ask people to look past their little situation and realize
and I know,
it's not.
I know people personally that still don't have power, that have power's been out since Friday.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you can poo-poo on the storm all you want, but try living your life without electricity for a week.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Think about that, man.
And then you see Amish.
All right, so what do you guys think about this whole Javaris Crittenden situation? If you haven't heard, he's been charged with murder, the drive-by shooting of a 22-year-old girl in Atlanta. Supposedly, he wasn't aiming for her, but, you know, that's what happens when you don't know how to shoot and you're shooting at people. Never catch him in the crowd, catch him solo, make the right man bleed. But on the real, you probably know this name because he was the guy who got into the little altercation with Gilbert Arenas in the Washington Wizards locker room, and they had guns involved in that. For a few days, he was just basically a fugitive from the law, not really saying that he was running, but he didn't turn himself in. He was,
he was on the run.
So
he was
when
on
he
the run,
decided, yeah, he decided on Monday night that he would turn himself in Atlanta Tuesday morning. So as he tried to board a flight from John Wayne Airport in Orange County, California, the feds and the Orange County police arrested him. So now he's finally in custody. What do you guys think of this situation, man? What the hell is wrong with Javaris Crittenden?
He needs to get counseled by Mitchell Butler.
I hope somehow – no, he's beyond Mitchell, man. I hope – honestly, this is what I – when I heard the whole story, I read it. And we kind of broke it, you know, I think we broke it first on social media, but I'm just giving us probably too much credit. I really hope that somehow this whole story for him isn't true. Like, because if it is true, this is like one of the most heinous acts that you can think of, because at the end of the day, the young lady who was innocent in this was a mother of four children. And she was relatively young, because I think she was like 22, 24, somewhere in there. So she had her entire life ahead of her, and now you have four motherless children. So I hope somehow for his own sake that it wasn't even him, or they figure out that, you know, he may have just been in the car, but, you know, something. Either way, you know,
his career. Like an example, like we said earlier, Austin, this is an example when keeping it real goes wrong. Like, you know, because supposedly he was looking for somebody. He was aiming for somebody who had supposedly robbed him back in April. So this was retaliatory. So if they do find out that it was him, he is going to get the book thrown at him because it was super premeditated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All I know is this, y'all. We got earthquakes. We got hurricanes. We got professional athletes doing drive-by shooting. What's going on, cuz? Like, yo.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yo, you
it's
can't get nobody to put that work in for you. Like, yo, you're actually going to – he's a professional athlete.
This is worse than, like, Maurice.
He's talking about good –
I'm saying, like –
Real quick, it's crazy in the world of sports right now, yo.
Yeah, they caught the dude at the airport, like
– Reasoning gross.
You know, it's crazy. It's to the point where – you know how they always say that you know, athletes are hanging around criminals, and the athletes are criminals now.
Exactly.
Well, the unfortunate part about it, too, Jim, is just these dudes come from environments and are raised in not to just use a general term, but just like the hood. And a lot of them don't understand how to differentiate them, like take themselves out of that, because they know that they're NBA players, they know that they're rich, but they still think that they're the person who they were prior to all this, and they just push out a little that life.
I ain't even giving the benefit of that one, PJ, because one time I think it was Akil, he kind of put this on blast and said that, you know, more than 65-70% of the NBA comes from suburban homes. And really this whole influence of pop culture got these young knuckleheads thinking that there's something that they aren't. Because a lot of these kids don't come from bad situations. They just trying to do what they see in videos and movies.
That's
Come with some dude. I mean, when you look at people like Michael Vick and AI, though, they definitely do.
I think they're the exceptions, though. What this dude did was basically watch Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society and try and go out and emulate King. Like, are you serious?
Right.
Who does a drive-by in 2011?
Yeah, I mean,
he's talking about that. He's talking about the actual act. Like, why is he doing drive-by? Not that he shot somebody, but why is he doing it?
Why is he actually driving by? That's a 187. That's a 187, man.
I thought drive-bys were like, I thought that was played out. I thought cats didn't do drive-bys.
That's what
I was
saying. Like, what's going on with that?
But I just wonder what has to be going through his mind to, you know, do the ends justify the means? Like, all right, so
Gilbert was strapped like that because he knew what it was.
Yeah, you, right.
I know,
but, I mean, you killing him to retaliate for getting robbed.
Gilbert, a little further, he probably would have shot me.
That's what I'm saying. Gilbert owed him money, right? Gilbert owed him money, and then Gilbert blew him off, and then Javaris had his piece. So Gilbert is lucky. I know Gilbert is, like, probably saying his prayers right now, like, yo, homie would have just killed me if I didn't pay him at some point.
I mean, Kill. I guarantee you, after this story broke, Gilbert sent his ass a check.
No,
this dude is real. This dude is not for real.
He for real. He's serious.
Yeah. He damn sure is real. All right,
and you know what? Real quick, and you know how, you know, Gilbert Arenas, he be on that jokey kind of stuff, and hey, some people, you know, you're not supposed to joke with. So Gilbert was probably just joking the whole time, and homie's like real, and that's not the dude that you mess with.
He probably was loading his clip the whole time Gilbert was laughing. But so we'll get into this story more in depth because more stuff is going to come out. You know, it's going to be a trial, so we'll be talking about this for a long time. Just can mention this. We don't have time really to talk about it, but Morgan State University the other night, we had another one of those games that we talked about with Mitch Butler. Kevin Durant and his boys from the Goodman League played against the team from the Mello League, which consisted of like Carmelo, LeBron James, Chris Paul. The Mello League team won 149-141. The highlights of the game were Kevin Durant and LeBron James going at each other all night. Kevin Durant finished with 59 points. LeBron finished with 32 points.
I've been saying Kevin is
laughing.
I've been saying Kevin's better.
Carmelo had 27. Chris Paul had 16, and they said he had some crazy assists. So, you know, we won't really get to talk about that because Jimmy's going to take us into the NFL.
Does anybody know how LeBron played in the fourth quarter, though?
They said he actually played well in the fourth quarter. Well, SportsCenter did.
Okay.
You know, they're probably trying to reshape his image over the offseason.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a quick question. We're going to move to football. Let me ask you a quick question. In terms of Mitch's idea, would you pay to see, like, I guess a traveling all-star game?
Shit, I was about to go to that game.
Yeah.
I think they should get together and travel and, like, shoot for captain like you do on the playground. Shoot for captain.
Good show because it'll be real NBA players, kind of like the and-one mixtape tour, you know, without the drawing dude out there with the microphone on the court. But, yeah, that would be a real good idea. But, like I said, he's not getting them dudes to travel around on the bus like they're the Harlem Wrens or something. That's not going
only person. Only person. Only person that might do it is Kevin Durant.
Like,
he would play
far.
Yo, Ron Artest will drive the bus.
Yeah, Ron Artest will drive the car and get tickets. But go ahead, Jim.
Let's talk some football, though, y'all. Y'all ready to talk some football?
Of course,
know it.
All right,
hell.
First thing I want to talk about is what we like to call the NFL Twitter files. Because some of your favorite NFL players were acting a fool on Twitter this past week. You know, for those who don't know, Twitter is run by the Illuminati. Anyway, the first one I want to talk about is one Arian Foster and his MRI tweet. Do you have the exact tweet there in front of you?
All right, yeah, this cat put his he tweeted a picture of his MRI of his messed up hamstring. He tweeted, "This is an MRI of my hamstring. The white stuff surrounding the muscle is known in the medical world as anti-awesomeness." What's wrong with him? The crazy part about this story is that an ESPN doctor saw this. His name was Dr. Michael Kaplan, And he said the MRI scan tweeted by Foster demonstrates considerable muscle damage with bleeding and swelling. Treatment is conservative. Rest, physical therapy, and stretching, ultrasound, and anti-inflammatory medicine will be employed. Foster will use a gradual strengthening program when he's ready. A return to the field would not be expected before 3 to 4 weeks. Yo.
Damn, he just dropped on my fantasy board.
Yeah, so, but listen, Aaron Foster was saying, he basically said, if I had a significant injury, why would I post it? I'll be fine. It was just meant to make fun of the whole situation. Humor is lost nowadays. But the Texans aren't laughing, yo. They're saying that he violated a team policy by disclosing medical information via social media.
That's HIPAA or something.
He violated
HIPAA.
You know, Teddy Bruschi was on, like, NFL Live. Like, if I was still playing linebacker in the league, I'd try to twist his hamstring every time we were in a pile. So do y'all think what do y'all think about tweeting your injury information to the world?
I just think that's my only comment. Stupid.
Twitter needs to be taken away from these monkeys.
Yeah,
he
sent the white meat out.
They don't know how to handle it.
He sent a picture of his white meat. My question is, what does it? So basically, he sent this out because he was upset about the way people were talking about him in regards to fantasy, right?
Right.
Because before he sent this, he was, like, complaining about people not caring about his injury and wanting to know if he's going to be playing for their fantasy teams. So I don't even understand why he did it. I don't understand what that did by sending out that picture. A lot of times when people do this, I just wonder, like, why? Like, I mean, it's very basic, but, like, I don't understand what you were trying to get at with that. Like, what is that?
They want attention.
Like, really...
They want attention. They want attention. They crave for attention, yo.
But PJ, I think
why though? You play in the NFL, you
something.
Get a lot of. Huh?
He was trying to prove, like, I'm not hurt. And the doctor went on there and saw the tweet and just answered all
so he
of
was
that.
He was trying to prove he wasn't hurt with all that white matter in that joint. And he's trying to say, I'm not hurt. He ain't supposed to have all that white meat up in
so
your stuff,
question,
man.
So my question is, how did he get the picture of the MRI if the trainers didn't tell him that it was worse than he thought it was? They just gave him the picture, like, take that. But I don't. Or.
Yeah.
He probably didn't get permission. He probably just took a picture of it while they were out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
man, I'm going to tweet this.
We can move on to the next one. And real quick, if anybody wants to call in and talk about anything in the NFL, the number here is 323-410-0012. Just press 1, and we'll holler at you. If you're listening from your phone, press 1 if you want to talk, and we'll try to get to you. Go ahead, Jim.
All right, here, the next tweet we want to talk about is one Darnell Dockett in his gun tweet. Dev, what was the tweet?
Oh,
all right, he had 3 different tweets, and this is the tweets in order. Damn, I almost brung my rocket into work this morning like Gilbert Arenas. But mine was by accident. It was in my book bag. Tweet number 2. Kept saying to myself, why is my book bag so heavy? Looked inside it. It was big pookie nickel plated Glock 40 trying to come to work with. Third tweet from Darnell Dockett. The gun laws in Arizona are super cool. I can damn near have a grenade launcher on the seat, and long as it's registered, I'm good. LOL, nice. Yo,
yo, I'm killing myself.
Dudes, man. Like, what are you? I don't even understand, man. I don't get it.
I have no comment. I really have no comment. What can you say about that, man?
I bet you now they're gonna check his bag every time he comes into the facility.
Yo,
big pookie.
Man,
hey, yo, I'm
man
big
from,
pookie Glock nickel 40 something.
The man is from Burtonsville, Maryland.
My question is why, though, y'all? Like, for what are you talking about your gun like this for? Like, are you supposed to intimidate people that may have been plotting on robbing you and, like,
no,
now they know that you
no,
have a gun?
No,
is that what it is?
No. Cool.
I'm just trying – hey, Brad, I'm just trying to think – I'm trying to brainstorm why he's so stupid. Like, I'm thinking out loud just trying to – what could you have been thinking about to be tweeting about your gun
it's
like
cool.
that?
It makes you cool.
Wow.
It makes you cool.
I don't even – I guess I'm old. I think we old, y'all. We just older than you.
Yeah, we getting there.
These
like,
whatever I have,
I'm not saying what it is. I'm not saying what it is. I'm not even telling you I have it. Like, why
exactly.
would, yo,
I want you to get surprised.
let's talk about, hold up, y'all, because we got another tweet we want to talk about.
Right.
The new million-dollar man, Chris Johnson, sent out an angry tweet to fans. Dev, what did that tweet read?
All right, now this tweet was in retaliation to a lot of people tweeting to him that he was being greedy. So he said, he told fake Titan fans, quote, I'm quoting him, fake Titan fans, shut up. He said, I don't have a regular job, so don't compare me to you, and I can care less if you think I'm greedy. And then of course, later tried to go and clarify the tweet. He said, my Titan fans taking it all wrong. Boo. I'm talking to the ones writing me racist comments. I'm not calling the Titan fans fake at all. Hashtag LUV, love. Come on. Didn't we talk about this on a previous show? We talked about this on a previous show. Whenever a black athlete does something stupid, when he's trying to clear it up, he always says somebody says something racial to him.
You know
that's
what?
The easy way. We get
I'm not
going to pull
that
card all
the
time.
Same thing.
I've pulled that card before, and I know damn well I was lying.
Man, he said something.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, man. It's not our fault that we're able to use that card. They gave it to us, and now we got to use it, right? Anyway.
That's how get out of jail free card. That's how get out of jail free card. You called me the N-word.
So what's up with his contract?
Yo, I just want to say that this dude right here, man, he got to have thicker skin than that, Paul. But let's talk about him getting paid. He signed a 4-year, $53 million extension with $30 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
What's your opinion of his contract? That's a nice chunk
my
of change.
Opinion of his my opinion of his contract is, he got that chicken.
He got a nice chicken.
Let me break it down real quick. They said, of course, like Jimmy said, it's $30 million guaranteed. But remember, this is an extension. So they just tacked it on to the 2 years he had remaining on his previous contract. So, you know, he's the Titan slave until 2016 if they choose to go that route. But you know, it's a running back. So he'll be cut in about 2 or 3 years tops. But
still
they said
he'll
report or something about a renegotiation.
But listen, he's going to receive $31 million over the first 3 years of the extension. And y'all know they just gave, down in Carolina, they gave D'Angelo Williams a 5-year, $43 million contract. And, you know, he gets $30 million over the first 3 seasons of his deal as well. So they always find a way to twist the numbers up where it seems like the player's getting a lot more than what he's really getting, because the average person would just look at that and do the average and be like, he's getting like $13 million a year. He's never going to see $13 million a year. He's going to see the 3 years of that $31 million because he's guaranteed 30, and then he's probably going to get cut after that. So,
no doubt. But guess what, though? That's 30M. That's a nice number considering, the position he plays.
He would have made $800,000 this year, so that's hell of a raise.
Well, he
that's
was making
nice
over.
Right
he was
there.
Making like 1.6 this year because they reworked his deal last year to where they put some of the money up front. So he would have made over $1 million this year, but leading the league in rushing for 3 straight years, you know, they had to do something about that. But he's getting but his guarantee is bigger than Adrian Peterson's.
Adrian Peterson is about to get. He's about to break the bank because they're gonna pay Adrian.
It's going to keep getting more and more, dog. These dudes is getting like the numbers, at least, are looking like basketball numbers. So they just keep trying to outdo each other. But the GMs keep getting creative in how they're going to give it to them. Like, they get creative with the disbursements, but the numbers sound big. And some dumb athletes might be like, oh, damn, I'm getting $100 million or something like that. And really, you're going to get about 40, and they're going to cut you in 2 years.
He is exactly right. He's exactly right. Because even Mike Vick's contract, they're saying, you know, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors with his contract. They said when it's said and done, he might really only be guaranteed like $36 million in that contract.
And he keeps six after the creditor. And he keeps about $6 million.
Exactly.
And then when he gets taxed, he get about $2 million. So he better not change his address just yet.
So a lot of these numbers look good, but a lot of these players aren't going to see a lot of that. So I think they're just satisfied with it looking good. Go ahead, Jim. You were about to say something.
Well, even beyond that, I'm saying that, you know, even if you just look at what the guaranteed money is, I mean, think about it. Back in the day, football players wasn't really getting money. I mean, when you look at all of these contracts this year, it just reinforces the theory that make your son play baseball. because, yo, I'm looking at these contracts and comparing it to some of these baseball contracts, and it's like, yo, these baseball players can buy some of these dudes, cuz.
Yo, A-Rod laughing at all these dudes. He just got his little money.
A-Rod
looking at these dudes like, yo, I pay that in taxes.
Yo, think about this. Chris Johnson got a $53 million contract. Vic got a $100 million contract. And Frank Gore got $13 million. Well, I think we're at $21
million. 21.
A-Rod,
7 years, 21.
Yeah, but A-Rod made more than them on his first deal. Not even the one he just got, his first deal, that all of them combined.
He played baseball.
Yo, A-Rod got like half a Billy on two contracts. But yo,
Captain Baseball be like average Joes making like $9 million a year. You'd be like, who? 3 years?
Yeah, I know.
Million.
I mean, look at Ryan Howard got like 125. Ryan Howard got like 125, right? And Pujols is trying to get like 35 a year.
Jason Worth got a $1.26 in Washington.
Yeah, Worth
is garbage this year too.
Hey, Kill.
Yo, his name is Jesse James.
He got his contract, and he ain't get a hit since.
He
like,
yo, he's
for
garbage.
Your man Jason Worth got $100 million. How does Jason Worth get? Yo, you're telling me that Jason Worth is better in his sport than Frank Gore is in his sport, or Chris Johnson for that matter?
Not on your life.
But it's just a whole different scale, though, so it's hard to even compare him. But he's darn sure he's not complete. We know that. He's not. But.
League minimum in the NBA, NLB is $1 million, right?
I'm not really sure what it is. I don't think it's $1 million, but I'm not sure.
I don't know. That might be the minor league.
They got many minor league contracts and stuff like that.
I don't mean the minors. I mean once you make the big dance, not like AAA or AA.
No, but, yeah. I mean, you get called up from the minors at any time, so you can make the big dance.
And you stay on your
tomorrow.
Same contract?
And you go down from the pros to the,
that's
to the minors.
Yeah. If you're a big prospect, Austin, they're going to pay you like that prospect, but you probably be playing in the minors for a while, like Bryce Harper and from the Nationals in Strasburg when he was there last year.
Yeah.
They were millionaires.
I remember J.D. Drew got a nice check, and he was in the minors for a minute, and he was getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he was showing up at minor league games, driving the Rockies.
So like Jimmy said, if your son want to pick, and if he's not partial to anything, give him a bat and a glove. Put a bat in the glove and we're on that hand lock with
it. Yo, I'll be honest. As a father, I fight that because I'm like, I mean, it's obviously I don't want to be like, you know, like, yeah, let me just film my son to be like a Major League Baseball player. But I'd be like, because I love basketball. But I'm like, yo, man, like, I need to be having him playing baseball. You know what I mean?
back to these contracts, though. Francis M.H. Gore. 3 years, $21 million with $13 million guaranteed. What do you think about his deal?
How old is Frank Gore, y'all?
He's worth it. 28.
He's like 26? Oh, 28.
Yeah. I think Frank Gore, you know, of course you got the top tier too, but I think Frank Gore is just as good as some of the top backs in the league. I think the reason why he only got what he got is because due to injury happened.
Yeah.
This dude got injured
twice
in college before even – I don't know how he even got in the league. He must have been that nice. He was the starter before McGahee even showed up in Miami. And then
that injury in Miami was something nasty. I'm even, like, thinking about it. I wish we got to move on because y'all bringing up that injury in the picture in my head, that was horrible because
– You silly.
Yeah, the friend, MH still got 13M guaranteed. But let's talk about the big boy deal that everybody wants to talk about. And that's why Michael Vick, 6 year, $100 million, 40M guaranteed. Got paid. Anyway,
man, Austin, he already exhausted his clip on this back in the PTR.
No, I got plenty of bullets.
We're forbidding you to speak.
Right, other people weigh in. What's your opinion on the contract?
I'm kind of along. Go ahead, PJ. You got it. I'll go after you.
All right, well, just real quick, man, my only thing with Vic is, I don't know. I want to say that I'm happy. I'm happy for him, just like Brad alluded to earlier. I'm happy for him that he made his comeback and everything, but it's tough with me to understand where Vic is at right now, because my thing is, that's a bit much for a season. Because if you, I'm looking at it like, you can't give him that kind of money for the Atlanta Michael Vick, because the Atlanta Michael Vick was an athlete that couldn't play quarterback. So this is all based off of 1 year. With when you consider the fact that we don't have an offensive line, he can't really pick up blitzes, and he's injury prone just because of his style of play. That's a little that's a lot of money for when you consider all those things for Vic, and he's 31. So I just don't know. I wouldn't say he's paid like the third best player in the league, like Brad says. So that, again, that's a bit steep. I think they're paying him off the potential and what they want him to be, but I would like to see a little bit more before I would commit that much to him. So
exactly. That's along the lines of what I'm thinking today. I'm at a wait and see approach this season with Mike Vick, as I think the Eagles should have been. Like you said, like, one season, and he didn't even play that whole season. He got injured during that season. But one season, the first time in your career that you've ever thrown over 2,900 yards. He only did that once. So really, you know, everything else was like 2,500 yards or less. You know, it's the first, like, everybody is excited because you threw for 21 touchdowns. The upper echelon quarterbacks in the league throw for like 30 touchdowns a year. Cats like Peyton and Brady throwing for, like, in the 40s, breaking records. So, you know, to be paid up there, see, this is the part that a lot of fans don't understand. When you get paid like those guys, that's when fans like me expect you to start playing.
Expectations.
Like,
yep.
Exactly. So if you don't get paid like them, I want you to be – I mean, of course, I want him to be Mike Vick, use his legs when he has to, and he's going to have to save his life if this offensive line doesn't improve.
Because we didn't spend any money on the line.
Yeah, I want you to sit back there and sling for 4,700 yards like Peyton Manning did in a bad season last year, 30-something touchdowns. You know, I'm trying to see this dude throw darts all over the field. So I'm rooting for it to happen. I hope it happens. But I'm in a wait-and-see mode because, like PJ said, one season does not make you, you know, the greatest. And I think the contract was a little premature.
I'm not an Eagles fan like you guys, but when I looked at the deal, I just thought it was too long of a deal, being like 6 years. Like, why would he's already? I mean, besides the fact that, you know, I mean, he's 31, right?
Yeah,
right.
31.
I ain't giving nobody a 31 a 6 year deal.
I mean,
that's
a lot
of money.
Like the people that we name, they don't really get injured. But, see, Mike Vick is a different 31. I mean, he's way more athletic.
I know, I agree with that. But I'm just talking
about
he's
way more.
I wouldn't give Peyton Manning. I wouldn't give.
Yo,
I wouldn't
he's
give
reckless,
Peyton,
too.
Brady, Montana.
Did y'all see how he tried to tackle?
I would, though, Jimmy, because quarterbacks can play into their late 30s, you know, and cats like Testaverde into their late 100s. But,
yeah.
See, my thing is, I'm going to give you a 3 or 4 year deal, and then if you're looking like you got some more time, give you another 3 or 4 year deal.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Then you're going to be year by year, 1 year deal.
I would do it big. I would do 3 just because he's not proven. Because Peyton and Brady, you know what you're getting from them, though. Like, you don't really – people think they do, but you still – I'm telling – all right, like, I don't want him to be bad, but all I'm saying is be careful because Michael Vick is trying to be a different player. Like, those guys, Brady and Manning, that's who they are. That's the type of style. They had to come into the league and understand how to understand – the NFL, like the plays, you know, it's faster, but they're still kind of playing that's they're still their style of play. They're in the pocket, they're pocket passers. Michael Vick is trying to change his game to become a different type of quarterback that's been different than he's been since he was 4 years old. And he's relying on certain things that my thing is great. If he's athletic and get out of the pocket, that's great. Well, you know, on third down when we need to keep the drive going, if the play breaks down and you can get us the first down, that's great. But let's not rely on your feet and your legs to win games because we saw that in Atlanta that don't happen. I mean, you can win games, but you're not going anywhere. And my thing is this. Lastly, I mean, I know I got the juicy jumbos, but hold on. All I'm saying is, with Michael Vick, like what Jimmy said, I think I would give him like 3 because I don't know. Like with Brady and Manning, I might get him like 6. But with Michael Vick, who's somebody that we're still not necessarily sure he's going to do what he did the first 6 games of last year before the defenses woke up and he couldn't counterpunch what they were doing. Are we going to see that same Vic? I don't understand why you couldn't give him, like, 3 years. Like, You know what I'm saying? Like, I still don't think you quite have
seen
enough.
Listen, I told you,
Judy.
Like I said, I'm not giving nobody 6 years. My man Peyton got paid and celebrated by getting neck surgery.
Yo.
Real quick.
Oh,
y'all forget with his age that he's 31, but spending those 2 years, he's really like 29. So I think the Eagles were putting that into their equation.
But Kill,
you had to
know
where it
is. No, even if somebody, yes, like half seriously thinking about that logic, you still got to remember the way he plays. He plays really recklessly. So a 31-year-old,
hey, Zach, you remember he tried to.
He's really 37.
Yeah.
He tried to tackle Troy Polamalu in the Pittsburgh game of a preseason game
with
his head. Like,
yeah,
I was so mad at DeBoer when he did that. I know mad that you threw an interception, like your eighth one that game, but why are you trying to tackle the ball with your head in preseason? Why?
Like, you know what? It's like,
what are you doing?
It's like, for me, it's like I can never be mad at Mike Vick because it's something about Virginia athletes. Like, they know you're going to get their heart on their sleeve. So even if the Eagles gave this man $200 million, I wouldn't be mad at him. Like, I was mad at Donovan because Donovan knows the game. Donovan's a coward. I was mad at Donovan. Donovan knew he was supposed to give that money back because he knew he was a skirt. Mike Vick isn't a coward. Mike's not a coward. Mike's going to go out there and try and tackle Troy Polamalu with his head because he wants to win, and he loves. So I'm not mad at that. But, this dude is never going to play 16 games. And me and Jimmy got a running discussion. Hey, Jimmy told me, why are you worried about your backup quarterback? Because he's Michael Vick, and we're going to see Vince Young. Why? Because this dude is going to get injured. He's going to get injured.
I just want to make a point, because PJ mentioned, how people always talk about, how he won in Atlanta. That is so, so overrated. And his whole tenure in Atlanta, they made the playoffs twice. Their playoff record was 2-2, so I don't want to keep hearing about how they won in Atlanta. They didn't win a damn thing.
Come on, stop. I hate when people say that, too. I want Michael Vick to be better than he is. I really want him. I really like him. Y'all know I like the dude. But the only thing I'm saying is I still would need to see more before I can be like, he's – like, my thing is people get too hyped too quick. Like, I like him, but then, like, the people that I'm like, and they're like, Vick is like, man, like – he's this and he's that, and that's great if you want him to be that great, and I want him too, but let's not put him there with Manning and Brady. If he's going to get paid like that, just like Dev said earlier, I want him to be able to do the things in a game that they can do. So I want him to be able to bring us back. I want him to make plays when there's no plays there. I want him to be able to pick up blitzes and make people pay. Like Brad said, you're supposed to make people pay when they blitz you. They're supposed to be scared and really strategic about when they're going to blitz because they don't want to get burnt. No, with Michael Vick, they just send in the house all the time because they're not scared.
What you're saying is you don't want to see him underthrow Riley Cooper to the opposite team.
I know, not in the playoff
everybody
game.
Everybody blame that on Riley Cooper anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
Up
he hasn't done those things yet. That's why people have to slow down a little bit.
Dev, you're absolutely right. People always talk about, in Atlanta, I mean, come on, man. That's bogus. I mean,
when he was in Atlanta, my uncle B Doc put him out the game?
Yeah, he smacked up.
He didn't put out so many people.
All I was saying is people act like Atlanta ain't in America. They don't give a fuck.
But you know what happened, though? You know what happened, Jim? You know why they got so much credit? Like that whole Lambeau Field thing, that whole legend was so overblown. They beat Green Bay in Lambeau, and people kind of gave them credit for like 16 more wins because they did that. So that's where
Favre was throwing the ball all over the place. But I give Vic credit for one thing in Atlanta, because the Michael Vick in Atlanta was the single greatest athlete on the video game ever. Vic was the greatest athlete ever on any video game, bar none. But
was
a disappointment.
My man was giving him a run, man. Bo Jackson on Tecmo Bowl.
Bo Jackson's number two. On my list of greatest athletes on video games, Bo Jackson's number two. But that Mike Vick on Madden, and I know now I know what I'm talking about because he's in the chat, but that Mike Vick was something special. If the Mike Vick, but
boy had like 199 in speed. But all I'm saying is, I mean, I'm good. Congratulations to the boy, Brad. None of us are mad at him. You can get the dough, get the dough. But just from, you know, the standpoint of the team giving him the dough, like, it just looked crazy to me. But it is what it is. How do you feel about
it? I'm mad at the Eagles. I'm not mad at him.
Let's take the X's and O's out of it. Do you think that, because people always make the argument that part of it is what he brings to the table from an economic standpoint in terms of his popularity.
Merchandising.
Yeah,
man, I buy that with other players in other cities, but the link is never going to be empty. I can be the quarterback in Philly, and the link is going to be full. They just rap about football.
We gonna come out just to boo you.
Yeah, and anybody, any star who switches teams is going to have the highest-selling jersey that year. That's just a given. So, you know, a lot of that stuff to me, in certain cities, not overall, but in certain cities, that's overblown. Because, like I said, one of us can be behind center, and the link will be so hard. They might be booing the hell out of us, throwing batteries at us, but they're going to be there.
The Daily News actually wrote an article about his economic impact on the city. And I'll find that and put it on our Facebook page. But they broke down his numbers in terms of his economic impact to the city. None of that has to do with winning ball games. It's just like, you know, from an economic standpoint.
As a fan, why would you even care about that?
Exactly.
I care less what kind of money you bring to the city.
When the Eagles
said,
I know
he
read that
ours,
we wouldn't care.
Yeah, you probably read that article and was like, damn, well, I ain't getting none of this damn money, and I got people to pay.
Hey, Doc Bay, you still there, Doc Bay?
Yeah, he's good. Go ahead, just move on, yo.
Okay, I just want to ask him a question about his Cowboys, man, because they cut the 5-time Pro Bowl center. What's his name, Garrod?
Andre Garrod.
Right, whatever his name. I know they cut, like, damn near their whole offensive line, man. And what's going on with these dudes down there, man?
Yeah, because before that, like, when camp started, they cut who? Mark Palumbo.
Leonard Davis.
Leonard Davis, yeah. What's his name? Romo just came back from injury, and it seemed like they're trying to get him killed again.
They're trying to get him hurt again.
Maybe this is the way where they figure this is the way they don't have to honor his contract. Just take away all of the time.
Yo, Garrod made a comment. He said, look, if they should just break the whole team up if they don't win it all this season. Like, what are your opinions of that? Do you think it's time to blow them up?
I think it's time to excommunicate them from the NFL.
Real quick before we answer that, y'all remember Garrod? He's actually a pretty good center, except for his troubles with the shotgun. But y'all remember he was the dude who got his head stomped by Albert Haynesworth down in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember that. I think cut him because he didn't do nothing when he got his head stomped. But go ahead.
he's been to the Pro Bowl 5 times, so he's a player. But what about the Cowboys? Don't make any noise this year. You think it's time to break that whole thing up?
Break what up? I always thought that whole Cowboys are so talented thing was overrated. Break who up? Like,
yo, the Cowboys organization is 500 since 1997. I'm not sure if it's 124 and 124 or 112 and 112. And they've had what, 2 playoff appearances, right? Since 1997.
Yeah, exactly. And besides people like Kill, you can't tell their fans this. Because they still talk about
give Jerry Jones credit for his marketing, man, because sometimes you
forget. They're still America's team, yeah.
You forget that they're not good.
He's done a great job. He must got Bruce Pearl head of his marketing department because he does a good job of, like, making you believe they're better than what they are.
Exactly, because teams, I ain't going front, teams still have, you know, it's like Cowboy Week when the Cowboys come to town and it's a big deal. They garbage.
Yep.
What are you getting all hype for? Like,
they still have that contingency of fans.
That's because the greatest
loyal
Cowboy of all time is Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones has sold. He sold that.
But, Jim, I'm just asking you with that question, like, break what up?
I agree. Who you go like?
Tony Homo.
Back like the.
Yo, we should check again and make sure his birthday this week. Never mind. But yo, another quick question. Now, Rex Ryan says the Jets will have the number one defense. Any thoughts on this? I mean, you have any other contenders you want to put up there?
Tell him off.
Shut up. Tell him I said that. Yo, shut up. Shut your mouth and coach.
It's not like – the thing is, like, okay, you were the number 3 defense last year, and you're always near the top. So, like, did you just tell us some rocket science information? Like, come on, man. Like, just – like Beyonce, like, shut up. You just want to be heard.
Of course they got a chance to be the number one D, but.
Yo, Buddy Ryan.
Between him and his brother, boy, I tell you.
Buddy Ryan did not hug his kids as they was growing up, and they just do anything possible for attention. Yo,
Buddy used to do the same stuff, though, cuz.
Buddy probably didn't know their names. He called them by their numbers, just like he did.
Like in his 50s, he just got a tattoo on the bottom half of his leg. Like, yo, come on, yo, shut up.
I don't really
condone
men with leg tattoos anyway. I hope none of y'all got leg tattoos. I don't really condone that.
If we can get Seth Joyner and Byron Evans, I'm thinking that we'd be in the running.
And I take Carlos Evans.
Of course you got your Pittsburghs. I think the Ravens probably going to, you know, I think they already fell off, but they're still, hover around near the top. Yeah. So, of course, Pittsburgh. I mean, it's just been preseason. I really can't call it, but,
Give me a dark horse team. Show your knowledge. Give me a dark horse team that could be up there.
San Diego.
San Diego, they were number one last year.
The Bengals?
Yeah. That's not a stretch. They were number one last year.
No, but when you say number one, they were number one statistically, but they were 8-18 that didn't make the playoffs. They were also like top five in offense.
Yo, they were number one in offense. How do you have number one? How do you have a top five offense and defense and don't make the playoffs? How's that possible?
The thing is, people pick the Chargers to win every year, and they're still doing it this year.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible to have a top five offense and defense that don't even make the playoffs?
That shows people, when people say that dumb stuff that they hear people, you know, they hear Jay-Z say, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. Man, numbers lying like answer that question.
Rivers.
If you believe in that quote, answer that question that Jimmy just asked. How does that happen?
That's my new response when people tell me that nonsense. I'm going to say, tell that to Phillip Rivers, yo. That's BS, man. Man, everybody getting paid in football now, man. But, you know, it's almost time for us to get out of here.
Yo, y'all ready for next week, man? It's going to be our one-year anniversary show, Jim. Y'all ready for next week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Big week, man.
We're going to have a four-hour show.
And like Jimmy said on the first show last year, he kept saying, and football start tonight. So football going to start next Thursday. So it's on.
Yeah,
man.
Our anniversary is on the day football starts. That's a beautiful thing, you know. And I'm looking forward to the season. It is funny considering the lockout and everything that we went through to get here, like, it was all for nothing.
Yeah.
Too bad basketball ain't going to be like that. We're going to be salty during basketball season, yo. All
right, Jim, we'll get us out of here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks to everybody for joining us in the war room this evening. Special thanks to Mitch Butler for joining us tonight for a great conversation. He got me motivated. Money-making Mitch got me ready to go own something. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for a special anniversary edition in the war room. And football will be played that evening. We'll be celebrating 1 year on air by taking you down memory lane to that first episode from September 9th, 2010. But that's not all. Like I said, football starts. So we'll preview the season next week, y'all. And until then, we'll talk to you. Out.
I rap for listeners, blunt heads, fly ladies, and prisoners, Hennessy holders, and old school niggas. Then I'll be dissing the unofficials that mo' coolie tie. I dropped out of coolie high, gas the bar, cocaine, cutie pie, jungle survivor, fuck who's the lava. My man put the battery in my back, a difference from energizer. Sentence begins to dent it with formality, moderation's infinite, money wise, a physiology, poetry that's a part of me. Retardedly, Bob, I dropped the ancient manifested hip hop, straight off the block, I reminisce a park chance. My man was shot for a sheep coat. Less to make me see, I'm dropping my weed smoke. It's real, grew up in tripe life. The times of white lines, the high fives, murderous night times, the night fights, the bright crimes.
that, y'all.
Jamaica Queen sang. Uptown was outpost, son. Heard he was kingpin, yo. Fuck rappers, real.